and welcome to this week's edition of the Perpetual Notion Machine half-hour science program for Thursday, July 13th, 2017. Each week, we discuss scientific research, news, or science happenings and events in the Madison, Wisconsin area. I'm your host, Lincoln Tice. Our topic today is going to continue on a past theme, the current state of the Ahara Chain of Lakes. In the last month, you may have noticed that Lake Mendota and Lake Monona have suffered some setbacks in water quality. There have been two large algae blooms, and because they have included blue-green algae, many beaches have been closed to swimming. But our human discomfort is minor compared to the many species who live in our lakes. Many fish and smaller creatures have been killed due to these algae blooms. We have recently done separate shows talking about blue-green algae and the invasive species zebra mussels. Today, we are going to continue to look at these and try to see if there could be a link between these two issues. And we're also going to try to take a more holistic view of what is going on with the lakes. I'm fortunate to have as my guest here in the studio Dr. Jake van der Zanden, a professor at the UW-Madison Center for Limnology. Jake studies the factors that degrade freshwater ecosystems, most recently focusing on the role of aquatic invasive species. He has authored about 100 scientific studies on the wide range of topics, including lake food webs, limnology, water quality, invasive species, climate change impacts, and managing sustainable fisheries. Hello, Jake, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lincoln. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, I'm curious, with you being such an expert on our lakes, do you swim in them?
Well, great question. I prefer to go up north and swim in the crystal clear waters of northern Wisconsin. But, Devil's Lake is always a great place to swim. I will admit, though, that I do swim in the lakes, and I do take my kids to swim in the lakes as well. The important thing is that you use the basic precautions. I will go check the city-county website on beach closures. And so the city and the county do testing for E. coli bacteria and also for blue-green algae. And if there is a concerning, concentrations of these things in the water, they'll close the beaches. And so I went onto that website today and I saw that some beaches were closed and some were open. So that's a great guide. And then the second thing is that if you're at the beach and maybe it's open, but a bloom just happens because they haven't had time to do the testing yet. I look in the water, and if it looks like you would not want to go in there,
like that's gross.
Yeah.
We if it looks not like, to use a scientific term, gross.
Disgusting. Yeah. If it looks like or green paints, you might say to yourself, I don't think I want to swim. And so there's that just use good judgment approach in here as well. So, but I do swim there. I go with my kids. When they were little babies, I didn't take them because there's a concern that little babies might drink the water. But my kids are big enough now where they don't do that. And then pets is another issue because pets often don't know not to start drinking the water in the lake. And so that's the other concern.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I swim in the lakes also, but you made a great point about up north. Like last weekend, I was fortunate to go up to Sylvania Wilderness in Michigan. Ooh. And the swimming was just unbelievable.
Yeah, Madison's great, but sometimes there's just no comparing. Yeah.
Yeah, I was swimming in the lakes up to a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's great to hear that you do swim in them. That reminds me, I asked Dr. Abigail Cantor, a leading national expert on municipal water chemistry, whether she drinks Madison's water from the tap or filters it. And she said she drinks it from the tap, which I thought was quite reassuring to hear an expert, say that. Yeah. Anyway, back to the lakes. First of all, what is blue-green algae and why does it cause beach closings?
Okay, well, first off, blue-green algae is not algae.
Right.
And we all call it blue-green algae, but it's actually cyanobacteria, which is, technically speaking, a type of bacteria. So it is photosynthetic. So in that sense, it resembles algae. And it's as we see it in the Madison Lakes, it floats around in the water column with other algae. And it has this tendency to undergo these bloom types of conditions. It's a big concern because it produces toxins, a variety of toxins as well that can be very dangerous to humans and animals. So that's sort of the broad description of what blue-green algae is.
Can I ask, what is the purpose of the toxins? Like, how could it benefit the blue-green algae to kill animals? Or are the toxins to kill, their competing bacteria or algae?
Blue-green algae, they're an ancient set of organisms, and, organisms produced chemicals as just some sort of byproduct or as for a particular reason. And I personally don't know why they produce these toxins, but they've been producing these toxins for a long period of time. So this is nothing new. So,
okay. And are other types of algae harmful as well?
Well, too much algae can produce problems. So you could have situations where you have lots of nutrients coming into a lake. And, you know, nutrients, we're often referring to phosphorus because phosphorus is the most important nutrient that limits the growth of algae. It's the most uncommon nutrient out there relative to nitrogen. So it's a plant nutrient. And so people will put it on their yards or put it in fields, and, you know, algae are a plant as well. So you can have lots of nutrients coming in. You can have too much algae, and that can have harmful effects on lakes and cause a lot of these same problems that we see when we have blue-green algae blooms. So, yeah, too much algae or too much blue-green algae can produce similar types of problems in lakes.
And one of those problems is fish kills, correct?
Yeah. And fish kills are, you know, I think we can use as an example the big blue-green algae bloom we saw in Mendota and the Ahara River on June 16th. There was a large fish kill that happened in the Ahara River as a consequence of that blue-green algae bloom. And the reason was that, or, you know, I wasn't there. I was actually out of town during that blue-green algae bloom. But typically what happens is that the algae they bloom, there's huge amounts of algae, and then the algae dies, and it sinks down to the bottom, and it decomposes. And so when decomposition is a process that's driven by microbes or bacteria, and those bacteria are using up the oxygen in the system, and that can cause this condition where there's no oxygen left in the environment. So it's sort of this side effect of the algae bloom as everything is rotting and decaying, and the oxygen disappears, and the fish literally do not have enough oxygen to live. And so during this fish kill that happened on the weekend of June 16th, there were fish gasping for air at the surface. And one of my postdoc in my lab, Tyler Tenney, was there standing at the side of the river seeing these fish just coming up to the surface, gasping for air.
Fish don't breathe air.
Well, correct? No, but like, but the air, the atmosphere has a lot of oxygen, yeah. Right? And so there are quite a few fish that do breathe air.
So they breathe it in their mouth, or do they just get their gills?
I think they were just kind of gasping at straws there, right? I mean, bluegill is not designed to be an air-breathing fish like some other fish, right? So they were just sort of gasping and they're not lungfish. but they're sort of grasping at straw, so to speak. And what else he saw was he saw crayfish coming out from under the rocks and crawling up on land, and sort of they were in this state of kind of disorientation, and they were kind of coming up on land. And again, that's something that you might expect during a condition where there was no oxygen. And honestly, I have not ever seen crayfish in the Ahara River between Lake Mendota and Monona. I didn't know they were there. And he's seeing these crayfish, which, you know, are often pretty secretive organisms, coming out into the open in broad daylight, coming up onto shore and dying. So the consequences of this were pretty pretty stunning. And visually, you know, people who were there were very affected by it.
Wow. So I had a question. Why do algae go through such boom and bust cycles? Like, why can't they maintain an equilibrium concentration in the water? Or maybe this will seg into my next question. Like, what's really causing these massive algae bloom? What are the main causes of these algae blooms?
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of on that first one, blue-green algae tends to have this tendency to occasionally show these really high levels. And a lot of species in nature will do that. We'll see outbreaks of species, whether they're native or invasive. And, the conditions will come together where everything is just right and they do really well. Human beings, I mean, that's sort of like if we look at it on geological time frame, you know, we were at really low levels for a long time and our population has boomed.
So are you saying that we're going to crash soon?
Well, we'll see. Maybe you can talk about that tomorrow. So this is the case with the algae, and, you know, there are certainly times when blue-green algae undergo these booms. So you have to have these right conditions, and that would be a lot of nutrients combined with warm temperatures, because blue-green algae grow very well under warm conditions. And when we had that big June 16th bloom, it was really warm over that weekend. And then you need to have some calm water conditions. So sort of stagnant, you know, not a lot of winds, and the blue-green algae sort of float up to the top. They're buoyant, and then you get these scums at the surface. So so a lot of nutrients, warm temperatures, and then calm conditions, and these mats form. And that's sort of, you know, what you might think of as the perfect storm for a blue-green algae bloom.
Got it.
Yeah.
And we've also talked about zebra mussels, this new invasive species that is changing the biology of the lakes. In your opinion, are the zebra mussels affecting the blue-green algae bloom? Could they be a culprit? And tell us about zebra mussels.
Yeah,
just refresh our memory.
That's a really interesting question, and I would certainly view that as an interesting hypothesis that we need to sort of think about. But zebra mussels, they're on the radar here in Madison as of the last year or so. It's a species that is originally from the Caspian Sea, so in Central Asia. It got transported over into North America in the late 1980s. It was first discovered in 1988. And within a couple of years, it had spread all through the Great Lakes. I mean, it rapidly spread through that water system. And then it jumped over into the Mississippi River and quickly spread down through the Mississippi. Then throughout the 1990s, zebra mussels started to spread into the more isolated inland lakes that are, you know, not connected to the Great Lakes, but they're starting to pop up in lakes all around Wisconsin and the surrounding area. And they've been slowly progressing into the inland waters over the course of the last 25 years or so. At this point, there are a couple of hundred water bodies in Wisconsin that have zebra mussels, but there are also, you know, thousands of water bodies that don't. So, you know, they don't necessarily invade every lake right away, and their progression has been pretty slow.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that they were originally brought here from Asia in bilge water on the large ships that use the Great Lakes.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yeah, there are ships that actually go in and out of the Great Lakes, large ocean-going ships. And so they will transport water. They call it ballast water.
When they're empty, right?
Yeah.
They bring in water when they're empty to maintain how high they float.
Yeah, they need to sort of keep their balance, and so they'll bring water in. And so a ship can take in a bunch of water from the Baltic Sea, and then it can come over into the Great Lakes, and it can discharge that water.
Although we have regulations about that now, right?
Yeah, there has been an incredibly slow progress in cracking down on it, but finally they've mandated mid-water ballast exchange, so you have to flush a bunch of salt water in when you're out in the ocean, finally.
Yep.
And it took them so long to get to that.
And it's not really that hard, is it, right?
No,
it's not
that hard.
One extra step in the gigantic sea crossing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm no expert on what these big ships are doing, but and the other thing to note is that very little shipping traffic and cargo moves through the seaway now. The ship, when they built the seaway in the 1950s,
the
St. Lawrence Seaway. Yeah, they're tiny little ships, and nowadays we have these huge cargo container ships, and these ships that people are using for shipping cargo around don't even really fit through the seaway anymore. So it's a really small fraction of the cargo that moves through, but it has done a tremendous amount of damage by bringing in zebra mussels and a whole bunch of other species from around the world into our Great Lakes. And then the Great Lakes is just the starting point. These species spread into Lake Mendota and all these other inland water bodies, including water bodies all out in the western United States. So out in Nevada and California, we're now seeing zebra mussel invasions and all the implications of impacts of that.
So do you think that is from powerboats? Is that how they're getting spread? People not rinsing their boats as they move from the Great Lakes into a smaller lake?
Yeah, that's probably the main way. So zebra mussels can either spread in the adult stage. And remember, a zebra mussel is about the size of your fingernail, the adults. And
we can't eat them, unfortunately.
No, I mean, you could try. They could make a nice broth, but, you know, no, there's not a lot of meat on a zebra mussel.
Mussels.
Yeah, you'd have to be really hungry, but there's a lot of them out there.
Or very small.
There's that, yeah. The adults could be moved on a boat. And there is an example. There was a boat in, let me think what year that was. It was 2011. And this boat had been on Lake Ripley, and then they took the boat out and they brought it over into Lake Mendota, and it was in Mendota for about a month. And then up at one of the marinas, they took the boat out and saw that it was covered in zebra mussels. They're taking this boat out of Mendota. It's covered in zebra mussels. And it ends up being that these people just had the boat in Ripley. The boat got encrusted with zebra mussels, and then they moved it to Mendota. So the DNR was involved, and, you know, these people probably got in trouble for doing this. But that's sort of one way that zebra mussels might have been introduced into Lake Mendota. But then there's the other invisible way that they can be spread around. Zebra mussels produce these tiny little larvae. And the larvae are microscopic, and they are going to be in lake water. So if we were to go out to Lake Mendota now and look through the microscope, we'd probably see these little tiny larvae.
So they move around?
Yeah, yeah, they move around. But they're in the plankton.
You know, our sessile.
Yeah, yeah. So mussels are attached to the bottom, right? And you only see them on the bottom. These larvae are free-floating in the water column. They're in the plankton. And there are vast numbers of them. So if someone were to transport some water from Lake Mendota into some other lake, let's say Lake Wingra, in the bottom of their boat or something, they could easily be transporting these larvae. The larvae then settle out, and then they grow into adults. And one adult zebra mussel can produce something on the order of 1 million larvae in a year. And there are a lot of zebra mussels out there.
Yeah, and part of the problem with zebra mussels is they encrust everything, right? Like, they just cover everything, and they can, you know, plug pipes, like...
Yeah.
Power plant intakes and dams and things like that.
It is, yeah, it's really remarkable. So there's, you know, a lot of implications of the zebra mussel invasion. One is the impact on intakes and infrastructure, and absolutely just encrusting any sort of hard surface out there in the environment. So if you're a power plant or a company that has a water intake, you're probably going to have to start spending a lot of money getting these zebra mussels off so that the intakes don't get clogged. So that's one main impact, but there's lots of others too.
Yeah, like their impact on the environment, the other species that live in the lake, right? So let's get back to that. Like, how could they have anything to do with recent algae blooms?
Okay, that's a really, really interesting question. And there are some studies that have made that link. The question is there some sort of link here in Lake Mendota? Because every lake is different, and in the same way that every person is different. You know, people will respond to changes in their surroundings differently. Well, lakes are the same. And so what we can say is that zebra mussels just got into Lake Mendota and this, you know, the Yahara system in 2015. Okay. When we first discovered them, they were very few. I mean, like, you'd had to really look to find them. In 2016, we started seeing a lot of them. So the 2015 ones reproduced, but they were all little ones, right? And then now 2017, those littler ones are growing up, and we're seeing this increasing population of them out there. So my view is that 2017 is really the first year where they are impact. There's enough of them out there to really impact the system. And it's notable that 2017, we see this really large blue-green algae bloom, which is unlike anything that I've ever seen before in the Madison Lakes. Now, I've been here for 17 years. There are people like Steve Carpenter, who I think was on the show last week, or maybe talked to someone else on the at Wart last week, who said that he hasn't seen anything like this since 1994. So to me, it was an unprecedented algae bloom, and it's notable that it happens, you know, at the same year that zebra mussels are ramping up. So there's a few reasons to believe that there is a link here. That the zebra mussels live down on the bottom, and the way they feed is by filter feeding. So they have a siphon. They suck in water into their bodies, but they spit out the particles in that water that they don't like. And then they keep and consume the particles that they do like. And zebra mussels don't like feeding on blue-green algae. It has these toxins to a zebra mussel. It just doesn't taste good. So zebra mussels are very well known to be like spitting out all the blue-green algae while they're voraciously filtering the non-blue-green algae out there in the environment. A single individual zebra mussel can filter something like a liter of water a day. And now the bottom of Lake Mendota is blanketed with these things. Okay, so they're filtering the water. They're taking out all of those other algae, the non-blue-greens, but they're spitting out the blue greens. So
I
what
didn't
that does,
they were that selective. Like, I didn't realize. Yeah, intelligence.
Well, or? they can taste. You know, they basically like, hey, this doesn't taste good. We spit it out. And there's some YouTube videos that show this. If you go like Google zebra mussel feeding, spitting out blue green algae, you can see these videos, and it's amazing how they just spit particles out you know.
And, really? You can see
You can see it, yeah.
Wow.
There's a video, I think it's from, it's actually from Wisconsin Sea Grant, and it's sped up. So you see them like taking in all these particles and then spitting certain ones out. So they're selective. Mm. And so now imagine you have normal algae out there and you have blue-greens. And the normal algae are being taken out and the blue-greens are being left behind. Well, what you're doing is you're giving a competitive advantage to the blue-greens. And so maybe it's not surprising then that you're going to see an increased proliferation of the blue-greens.
I get it.
Yeah.
I had another question about a different invasive species that we were hearing a lot about a while ago, the spiny water flea.
Oh,
is that still a big concern? And they're preying on the Daphnia?
Yes.
Could that be a contributing factor?
So that is all kind of part of this larger story. So, you know, in 2009, spiny water flea came in. And this is a tiny crustacean. It's got a really long spine. And the spiny water flea feeds on Daphnia. Daphnia are a tiny crustacean that feeds on algae. So we're kind of seeing the food chain here, right? Spiny water flea, though, sort of upends the food chain and knocks down the Daphnia in the system and really reduced its abundance. And as a consequence, there's not as much, you know, there aren't those Daphnia feeding on the algae because the Daphnia are in the tank. And so we had more algae blooms. So following the spiny water flea invasion, we lost about 3 feet of water clarity in Lake Mendota when we just do that straight before and after comparison. So they really had a major impact on water clarity. And, you know, so the system was sort of equilibrating. Water clarity was worse. And then now in 2015, boom, another perturbation happens to the system. And it's just, I sort of view it as the system has just been whacked twice in the last several years. And, you know, it's going to have to somehow find a new equilibrium. So, but yeah, and the question is, how do the spiny water flea and the zebra mussels interact, right? You know, maybe their combined effect is going to be something totally unlike the sum of the effects of either one of those. So, and we don't know what's going to happen, but some students at the Center for Limnology are starting to work on that question. Like, what do the two together do?
Hmm. I also wanted to talk about the fish species that could be affected by this. Mm-hmm. A lot of people fish in our Yahara lakes. So can different species of fish affected differently by these algae blooms?
Okay. Well, so in the case of these really large algae blooms, like the one we saw on June 16th, it seemed to me to be a complete die-off. I was gone over the weekend, and I showed up on Sunday. The algae bloom was on Friday, the 16th. I showed up on the evening of the 18th, and I walked along the Yahara River, and I saw pretty much every fish species that you could imagine sort of washed up on the shore and floating up along the shore. Pike, walleye, bullhead, lots of bluegills, largemouth bass, you know, the whole gamut.
Carp?
I don't know if I saw any carp.
That's actually was going to be one of my questions.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know,
carp, because that's an invasive fish, and
it is.
Aren't they kind of, are they implicated too in maybe affecting our water quality?
Yeah, carp play a pretty important role in water quality. So I didn't see any. I can't remember having seen any
maybe
carp.
The carp can actually handle it.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, they're pretty tolerant of degraded conditions. Carp tend to have this role of kicking up sediments from the bottom. And they root around in the mud, and they will make the water more turbid. So they are also linked to poor water quality. And we saw some really interesting responses in Lake Wingra several years ago when the DNR, in collaboration with a number of partners, including us at the Center for Limnology, did a big carp removal.
Yeah, and you eradicated the carp from Wingra, correct?
Well, we didn't eradicate them. We reduced their abundance by about 50%. But the system flipped. The quality of the water changed pretty rapidly. So prior to the removal, which was in 2008, the lake tended to have this pea green soup coloration. It was really green. The carp were pulled out and the water got clear.
Yeah, Lake Wingra is actually my favorite lake to swim in now.
But there's a flip side to that. The water is clear, but sometimes you'll have these aquatic plants, you know, like the weeds, essentially. We call them macrophytes, but everyone else calls them weeds. They come up to the surface.
Aquatic plants.
And but then they get overgrown with all of the sticky, gooey stuff. And up at the surface, it turns yellow. And so there are these nuisance conditions that do pop up in Lake Wingra, in some years more so than others.
So you're saying because there's less algae, more light gets to the bottom,
precisely.
So the aquatic plants can grow better.
Yeah. So think about this. There's more light. There's still a lot of nutrients there, right? We didn't reduce the amount of nutrients that are in the system. Now light is getting to the bottom because the carp aren't stirring up the sediments, and they're not kicking up as much phytoplankton, nutrients into the water as well. But light is getting down to the bottom. The aquatic plants that grow from the bottom flourish, but there's also other algae that grow on the aquatic plants. There's sort of a stringy, attached algae that grows off that. And it is not very pleasant. I mean, if you've encountered that, you know, you may say to yourself, I'm not sure which was worse, the pea green soup or these aquatic plants that are just absolutely covered in this stringy, gooey stuff.
Yeah, as I swim from the designated swimming area at Wingra, I have to swim through that to get out to the middle of the lake where it's really nice.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that's a more natural condition for the lake, right? Like Wingra wasn't always this big, open, clear lake, was it? I mean, are these aquatic plants native plants? Like, should we be happy that they're doing well?
Yeah, you know, at some point we get into people's preferences in a big way. I mean, Wingra is artificially maintained. There's that dam there, right? And so if we would have gone back 150 years, it would have been more like a big wetland area.
Yeah.
And the water level has been brought up, and it's sort of been coaxed into being what now we would think of as a lake, right? But there are all those wetland areas around the edges of Wingra as well, right? Now, if we look at the plants that are in there, there's some natives. But there's an invasive plant that is pretty dominant in Lake Wingra, and that's Eurasian water milfoil. It's an aquatic plant, you know, just what people would call weeds.
That's
that species
sort of lacy, frilly, soft, like very, very thin parts to it.
Yeah, exactly. It sort of looks very delicate, but that often gets overgrown. It grows up to the surface, and they get overgrown with all of this stringy algae. So, yeah, I mean, so it's sort of like one flavor of bad versus another flavor of bad is the way I like to think of it. But the fundamental problem is that there's too much nutrients, too much phosphorus coming into the system. And then, you know, the carp manipulation just flipped it from kind of the pea green soup to the too many aquatic plants overgrown version of bad.
Okay, so just to recap, we've talked about a lot of things. But mainly the main causes for these algae blooms that we're seeing are these invasive species, these zebra mussels, these spiny water flea potentially. Also climate change increasing the water temperature, making more favorable algae conditions.
Yeah.
Also, one thing we didn't get a chance to talk about is climate change seems to be bringing more extreme rainfall events.
Yeah.
Which are washing more nutrients into the lake. So that's the third thing is nutrient concentration, right?
It's
causing these.
Yeah. And so I think that's a nice way to think about it is that you have these conditions that all come together to produce the right environment for toxic algae blooms. And we have been seeing warming temperatures. There's no denying that. And of course, all the climatologists who study this say, we're going to continue to see warming temperatures. And there's really not any debate about that. And we're in fact seeing these warming temperatures now. And so we shouldn't be surprised to be seeing increasing blue-green algae blooms like what we've been seeing in the Madison Lakes this summer. And then the climate change has also been increasing these large storm events. And that's again bringing in more.